Hello, in this audio snippet, we are going to continue talking about the death of America that happened on the 6th of September and, in a way, has been going on and will continue for a 13-day period, as we described. But for all intents and purposes, America and its calling is dead. It has no future. It's now a third world country, and as we explained in the previous audio recording, the brain death, or the head of America's calling, shall we say, died between the 6th of September and the 8th of September. It was a 3-day death that basically meant the death of the male personality, the future, the promise of the male personality of America. The judge personality died on the 6th of September, or its calling, or its potential. And on the 7th of September, the visionary personality of America's calling died. And then on the 8th of September, the conqueror personality died. And each of those personalities is represented in three of the original 13 colonies. The 6th of September, and the death of the judge personality corresponds with the death of what was in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania embodied that judge, foundational judge personality that America had. And if America had fulfilled its calling, then that judge component that is was embedded, shall we say, in a figurative sense, in Pennsylvania, that would have been manifested in a powerful and wonderful way. All of that died on the 6th. On the 7th, the death of the visionary personality corresponds with the death of what was embedded in Massachusetts. That visionary quality that America had, the potential for it achieving its fullness, died on the 7th of September. And then on the 8th of September, the death of the conqueror personality corresponds with the death of what was sown into the colony of New York. And then on the following days, different elements of America's calling and future have been dying off. But once the head is dead, once those three have been taken out, Pennsylvania in its main city of Philadelphia, Massachusetts and its main city of Boston, and New York State, with its main city obviously being New York City, once those were taken out, then it's as if you have a patient who's dead, brain dead, and once he's brain dead, then it's just a matter of time for the rest of the organs in the body to die off. And that's kind of what's been going on. But once you're brain dead, you're gone. I mean, there is no, in this case, there is no turning back. So the country's dead. It's just that the dying off is a process that takes a little bit of time. And as I was thinking about this, I was asking, why is the death of America so prolonged, shall we say? Why is it a 13-day process and not just an instant thing? I remember when I became aware of the death of Latin America, I perceived it to be on that one day, a Sunday, the 29th of June, 2003, and I felt it. Boom! It's done. The calling for the entire region, and there were three exceptions at the time, and three countries that were kind of exempt from that death. But they, two of them, died off between 2009 and 2014, And then the only one that I'm still not clear about whether it has died or not completely is Brazil. It's the only country in the Americas that is left, basically. But the thing is that when Latin America died on the 29th of June, to me, it felt like an instant thing. It's over, and that's it. It was a quick death, and maybe wasn't perceiving correctly. Maybe it was also a multi-day death, but I never got that impression. It was almost instant. So I basically instant. So from my understanding, so I was asking, well, why is the death of America so like drawn out? And then I realized it's like the understanding came to my heart and mind that. What's happening is that there has been so much life poured into this country, so much that was sown into it by hundreds and thousands and maybe even millions of people throughout its history. People who are no longer with us, who did all this sowing into the ground, hoping for something great that would be manifested in a future generation. And so there's a lot of life that was sown into this country. And because it has so much life in it, that's why it takes so long for the death to happen, if that makes any sense. You know, there's so much life contained in this country that it takes literally, it will... taking literally 13 days for that whole life to be drained out of it, and that's why it's taking so long, because there was so much invested into this land, and with Latin America it was more of an instant thing because of how the word that's coming to my head is intransigent. I don't know that I'm not quite sure what that. What the exact definition of the word is, but that's what came to my mind right now as I was thinking about Latin America, intransigent, and they were so intransigent that their death was instant. Now the other thing I wanted to mention was that. If we count from 1776, the date of the Declaration of Independence in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, all the way to the death of America in 2023, that adds up to, at least in terms of years, it is 247 years. And I feel that is very significant. For a couple of reasons. For one, it's 247 just happens to be 19 times 13. And 13, makes you think of the 13 colonies. And I've always associated the number 13 with rebellion. And there is good rebellion and bad rebellion. So just saying rebellion does not necessarily mean a bad thing. But so 13 is the number of rebellion, and 19 is always, for some reason, to me, it's always been a bad number. And as you know, it's not a coincidence to me why that whole virus nonsense became so intimately connected to the number 19. I think I may have shared in one. We may have shared in one of the postings on the website where these recordings are posted. Maybe at some point that an evil conqueror builds his house on 19 pillars, and there's kind of a and that's just not a haphazard comment. There is a validation. Or an explanation or validation of that. That's why to me 19 has always been like, it's just confirmation over and over again that 19 is like a bad number. I know every number can have a good connotation and a bad connotation, but for me 19 always seems to just just be bad, and it represents how America never came out of its adolescence. You know, as you know, the teenage years are defined to be literally from 13 to 19, hence teenager, you know, all the numbers that end in teen, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, that's the teenage years. And 20 is kind of like crossing a border. You're out of your teens, and now, you know, you enter a new decade of your life, the third decade of your life. And 20 in many cultures, for example, in the Jewish culture, was the age where you could become a warrior, you know, be part of an army and fight a war. It's like crossing a line into a different stage of adulthood. And in America, kind of died at 19. It died a teenager, as we shared in previous recordings. America, the juvenile that never fully matured. So it's fitting that the number of years it was alive, if you start from 1776, is a number that is a multiple of 19. 19 times 13, the 13 colonies never all stayed as teenagers and never matured, and that's why the 13 colonies are dying off right now. And the other thing that I find interesting about the number 247 is that when I see it in written form, it makes me think of 24/7. You know, as when people say, this store is open 24/7, which means 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So 24/7 has this connotation of permanence or perennial. And that kind of goes with I see it as a sort of a ironic thing, almost like a fitting joke. I'm not sure how to explain it, but that conservatives have always believed that the foundation of the country was so perfect that it deserved to be eternal, perennial, to be there forever. That's why they never felt a need to really question the Constitution. They would say, oh, it needed to be perfected. That's why we have the amendment system. And that's what makes it even more perfect, because it is capable of adjusting itself through the amendment system. That's how wise the founding fathers were. So they start going on and on about how wonderful it is. But at the end of the day, they always fall back to the basic idea that the Constitution, as it was written, was perfect. Like the foundation was wonderful. We just need to add layers or maybe do a few corrections here and there. But for the most part, it is basically the right way to go. The bicameral system, legislature, and the way the judicial branch is defined is okay. The way the executive branch is defined is okay. So everything was perfect. We just needed to continue with this forever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever. So to them, the Constitution was designed to be there and to be used as it stood 24/7, perennially, constantly, eternally. When they didn't realize that it was a very temporal little shed, like a little house made out of wood that was just built almost as an emergency thing just to get a country started. And that's how the founding fathers built the country. They built it because they had all these 13 colonies that were just, especially the southern ones, bickering about their state rights and all that rubbish, because they wanted to preserve slavery and all that. And because they said, you know, we're not going to take this, and you're not the boss of me. We are fighting the British crown, and we are also going to fight any other central power that tries to tell us what to do. So they all acted like these little teenagers, and they were all just fighting over how to start a country whilst at the same time maintaining their being able to do their little things, without being told what to do. And so this constitutional system was built in that kind of emergency mode, like this shed or a quick log cabin that was just built with wood, put together just to get going. That was the motivation, that was the attitude with which the Constitution was built. The whole political system that we have in America was built with that mindset. And the conservatives never understood that. That's why the country died. They never understood that. They thought it was like, as we've said a million times, they kept seeing the founding fathers as this like collective Moses coming down from the mountaintop with these tablets that had the Constitution written in it, and the whole system of government and everything. Like, this was the perfect thing, heavenly, eternal thing, like it came from God himself. And because of that, they thought it was eternal. And it's as if the truth was in a mocking way saying, well, this your system is to be in place 24/7, as you often claim. But as it turned out, it was 24/7 in the sense of 247 years, not 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, forever and ever. So I think there's like a fitting kind of mockery of America in that number, 247. Oh, you thought you were eternal. You thought you would have your system 24/7 forever and ever. Well, but yeah, you had it 24/7. It's just that it happens to be 247 years and no more. Also the fact that that number is 19 times 13 just emphasizes the immaturity of the country. It stayed a teenager, never fully matured into an age of 20, figurative age of 20. And it was and 13 colonies that rebelled. But unfortunately, this time they didn't rebel against tyranny, they rebelled against the truth. The truth was was constantly telling America, you need to change this, you need to change this, and especially to conservatives. Not to liberals, don't listen to the truth. They don't believe in the truth. They believe in, whatever is emotionally fitting and fits their ideology becomes the truth. Truth adjusts to their ideology, not the other way around. So they were never the ones being targeted in the conversation. It was always conservatives, because the conservatives at least claimed to be wanting to listen to the truth, and the truth kept talking and talking and talking, and they just were not willing to listen. So they rebelled against the truth. They said, no, we're not going to do it that way. We're going to do it this way. And that's why the country is dead. So I wanted to share a few articles and some thoughts. And also we wanted to kind of do a list of the states that die each day, that have been dying off every day in this 13-day period from the 6th of September to the 18th of September 2023. But before that, we wanted to mention a few things. For example, I saw this article on the Daily Mail about Hurricane Lee, and it was posted a couple of days ago, before this recording, on the 14th of September, 2023. So some of the information has varied, but at that moment, they had this headline that said, on the DailyMail.com, the headline reads, Hurricane Lee's now spans 345 miles as the storm barrels towards the U.S. East Coast, as Long Island and Cape Cod brace for floods. But the thing is, the size of this hurricane that's been churning, and it's interesting that it started churning around the time of the beginning of the death of America, or the 5th, around the beginning of September, around the 4th, 5th, you started hearing more and more about Hurricane Lee, and then on the 6th of September, it just continued. So it's like Hurricane Lee has been this sign of the death of America, this cloud, this darkness. And it's been hovering over the East Coast, and as you know, the 13 colonies are all along the eastern coast, because obviously, as the English arrived across the Atlantic, they would land on the East Coast. So that's why all the 13 colonies were kind of scattered along the East Coast, and none of them actually went inland. Eventually, obviously, the country went inland and towards the West Coast, but the 13 colonies all started on the East Coast. And this Hurricane Lee has been threatening, and this like this dark cloud over the East Coast, and when I saw it coming around the time of the death of the country, I felt like I felt it in my heart, this storm is going to be hovering and hanging around and being a big story for the whole 13 days of the death of the country. And it's been like that. We're almost at the end of the 13-day period, and Hurricane Lee is still in the news. And it's been this dark thing, literally, in the atmosphere. And it's been indirectly and sometimes directly causing damage. As we said in the previous recording, on the 8th of September, I was outside and I just could feel this strong, angry wind blowing. And Hurricane Lee was all the way down in near Puerto Rico at the time, or around that part of the Caribbean. But everybody kept associating everything that was going on. There was a sudden storm that knocked down things here in New Jersey and in Massachusetts and all over the place. But everybody kept thinking of Lee, and it's almost it was not Lee directly, but it's as if Lee was affecting the entire atmosphere so powerfully that it was triggering, if it was doing it indirectly, it was triggering these storms or these winds and all this activity along the East Coast all the way up north. So Lee has been churning, and the fact that it was 345 miles wide, imagine the size of that. And I was listening to to the Fox Weather Channel one day, and one of the persons there was saying, this thing is so huge, you can fit, if you put it like in the map and over New England, it would cover all of New England. It's just humongous. And I think that I saw a headline an hour before this recording on the Fox Weather Channel that was saying something that Lee right now is 550 miles across. So it has expanded. It's been this huge thing. So that's what I wanted to share about the size of the storm. It's been just humongous, and it's been hovering during the death of America. This Hurricane Lee has been kind of the big signal, a big visible signal of the death of the country the whole time. And I wanted to mention the size of the storm just to emphasize the scope of the storm and its relevance at this time. It's kind of a silent way, well, not so silent way, of the truth, telling America you're dead. It's more than just a storm. It's not just usually when we have hurricanes and stuff, you hear about it, boom, it hits a place and it's done. But this one has been this big monster lingering and just bringing this darkness over over the atmosphere for quite a while. And right now it's hitting New England. It's on its way towards Maine. And I find it interesting that it's been kind of aiming for Maine because Maine is the easternmost state in the country. So we had the whole thing that happened in Hawaii and Maui and Lahaina and all that that we talked about before. Hawaii is the westernmost state in America. And then we have now this storm hitting, you know, aiming for Maine. And it's almost a way of the truth saying, you know, from coast to coast, from one end to the other, you are done and I'm done with you. It's like this comprehensive strike out of America. And the Fox Weather Channel was saying, I saw the headline on the screen that said, 1 to 3 feet of surge expected along New England coast. So they were saying that wind will probably be the greatest impact of this storm on New England. It's just this unignorable presence aware that says there's something wrong in the atmosphere. There's something wrong. There's something not right. And that's what Lee is saying constantly. So I wanted to mention that. It's now a category one storm, but it's still a huge, huge thing. And they've had a lot. Lee has been causing mayhem all over the place. I heard that in Georgia there was this massive flooding, people having their houses flooded. And there have been issues in Maryland and all over the East Coast. And it's been like striking, like every now and then, boom, boom, hitting here, hitting there, hitting there. Like here in New Jersey, it downed power lines and caused damage. And then in Massachusetts, it's like this random just attack, boom, 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 all over the place. So it is not this. It's not your usual hurricane. It's not your usual storm. It has a comprehensive nature to it. I don't know how to explain it, and it correlates with the comprehensive death of the country. The country is dead. America is dead. I wanted to share a little bit on another seemingly unrelated story that I ran across, if I can find it here, on CBN, the Christian Broadcasting Network website, CBN.com. It is CBN.com. The headline reads, I'm not sure how to pronounce this, Tokelahoma. It's Tokelahoma. So it's kind of a play on the name Oklahoma with Toke. I'm not sure why. Tokelahoma. Red state becomes wild west of weed where Chinese nationals own 75% of the farms. And this was posted on the 12th of September. It says, let me see here. It says Muskogee, if that's how you pronounce it, Oklahoma. Since the doors began opening for legalized marijuana, a number of states have joined the movement. That includes Oklahoma, which has become one of the easier places to grow or sell marijuana. Perhaps no state has been as radically transformed by the legalization of medical marijuana as Oklahoma. With the number of growers, sellers, and users skyrocketing across the state, it's no surprise it's being called the Wild West of Weed. This Bible Belt town of 37,000 is now a marijuana mecca. With the scent drifting downwind, an entrepreneur is known as Big Papa and Boss Lady, riding high on the profits. Ron and B. Ann Epperson put off retirement to run their 24-hour weed dispensary. For our terminal patients, we offer this for nothing. There's a lot of people who depend on this medicine, unquote, said Ron Epperson, owner of Big Papa's Okie Tokie. I guess that's why they were saying Tokelahoma. It's clear that many other people are counting on it too, since voters backed medical marijuana in 2018 by a double-digit margin. 1 out of 10 Oklahomans now carries a medical marijuana card, and no qualifying medical condition is required. Scroll down here a bit. It says this deep red Republican state has basically turned green, racking up more retail marijuana stores than Colorado, Oregon, and Washington combined, along with more licensed farms than California. So it says here Oklahoma has 30 times more regulated medical cannabis than is needed to meet the demand of licensed patients. This makes it tough for law enforcement and easier for illicit businesses to hide in plain sight. And it says here that apparently 75% of the marijuana farms are owned by Chinese nationals. And then it keeps going and going and going, but what I wanted to share here is that Oklahoma is a red state. I mean, I don't know how to explain it, but you think of Oklahoma, you don't think of radical liberals. You don't think of crazy transsexual promoting drag queens. You don't think of that. You just think of red state, you know, as red as it gets, you know, cowboys all over the place and so forth. And what I want to emphasize here is that the country is so dead, there is no refuge. There's no place where you can go, oh, well, there, I'm going to go hide in this red state. Yes, there might be a certain level of torment or less attacks or whatever, shall we say, to a certain extent in some places than in others. But for the most, but there's no place that will be preserved, you know, where the calling and the future is preserved. It's all gone. And even Oklahoma, that you would consider to be, you know, a quote solid red, quote conservative state, now has this marijuana thing. 10% of Oklahomans are carrying a medical marijuana card. I read another story that around 16% apparently of Americans are now using marijuana. I don't know if that's an exaggeration or not, but that's 1/6 of the population. And you think it's not a population of 3,000 people. It's a population of over 300 million people. I mean, that's how bad it is. And I've been reading all these stories that have been coming out about the how destructive cannabis is physically. It just leads to schizophrenia. It leads to addiction. It's much more addictive than the promoters of cannabis have tried to make it out to be. It's very addictive. And it just literally destroys your brain cells, and it causes depression. It increases suicide rates. People have been killing themselves a lot more in America, and a lot of it is tied to cannabis. And there's a curse in cannabis too. You know, as I've constantly shared, every time I smell one of those people on the streets, when I get the stench, I always declare that a curse on them and a judgment, that they will be dead in 2 years. I mean, it used to be 4 years. It's been going down year by year. So the curse is being played out, and the people are dying. So, but My point is that that even in a red state, you're having this happening, and Oklahoma has always been almost a symbol of America's mediocrity in my mind. If you go to one of the postings on the website where these recordings are posted, I think there's a posting called "Oklahoma is not okay," because the abbreviation for Oklahoma, you know, because every state has a two-letter abbreviation in America, and obviously the abbreviation for Oklahoma is OK, the first two letters. And in Oklahoma, it's a place where you have all these, you know, Christians, conservative Christians, and but it's not OK. And to me, Oklahoma represents how conservatism makes itself feel like it's okay, that it's on the right path, but it isn't okay. It's an okay on the surface, but underneath the surface, it's not okay. And this is a reflection of this. The story is a reflection of that reality in a place that has so many preachers and so many Christians running around. You have 1 out of 10 people carrying a marijuana card, and you have more cannabis farms than in Colorado, Oregon, and Washington combined, which is a feat, because Colorado has completely deteriorated. Oregon is a hellhole of liberalism. In some places, Oregon is kind of a mixture of very nasty conservatives, very nasty, evil conservatives, and I've dealt with some of them. I've had to deal with Oregon conservatives. They're nasty people, especially the Christian ones. Nasty people. Not all of them, but the ones I know there's something very wrong with Oregon. It's this mixture of very harsh conservatism with just radical, over the top liberalism. And Washington is also a mess. So the fact that Oklahoma can have more marijuana stores, I said farms, but it's actually stores, then those three states combined is a feat in and of itself. And the fact that it has more licensed farms than California, I mean, not only considering the size of California, and also considering how crazy California is, the fact that Oklahoma has more farms, licensed farms than California, it's just remarkable, but in a bad sense. So that's just to point out, there is no, the death is comprehensive, and that's what Lee is representing. You know, it's a comprehensive death. It's from coast to coast. It's all over the place. The death has permeated. It's endemic. It's all over the place. And there is no place of refuge where you can say, well, America's calling can survive in this little cave of Adullam, where it will just survive while the storm passes. No, it's over. It's over, baby. It's done. Now, the other thing that I wanted to share is the a thought that I had. And I may or may not have mentioned it at some point, but when Latin America died on June 29th, 2003, I had the confirmation in my heart, because there was an earthquake just as that was happening. I remember I was in this place, I was interceding, and then suddenly the earth began to shake. And I knew that I was aware that Latin America was about to die. And I remember that I was in this place by myself waiting for some people to show up. And they were not showing up. And I knew that if they did not show up, there's a connection there that I knew that had to do with Latin America, and that Latin America would be dead. So they did not show up, and I went out and I closed the door. And I knew that I had to leave at an exact time, 11, It was 11 hours with 11 minutes and 11 seconds. And I literally waited on with my watch to for that exact time. And then I closed the door and it was done. And to me, the earthquake was this just confirmation. Latin America is dead. And it's been dead ever since. I mean, things just, when you hear the news about Latin America ever since that date, it's all been downhill ever since. That's why you have so many illegals crossing the border into America right now, because it's hell down there. It's horrible. It is a nightmare after it had become such a promising place from 1986 up until 2003. It had a resurgence of democracy, of freedom, political freedom, religious freedom, economic capitalism development, all this flourishing, and it was all just wasted away by Latin Americans. The thing is that I had this confirmation in my heart through the earthquake. It's like the earthquake was like, no, I'm not imagining things. Latin America has died today. And I was thinking, well, when America dies, there's going to be an earthquake too, just like it happened with Latin America. But I wasn't quite sure. I felt there was going to be one, but that there was not going to be one. It was like this ambivalence in my heart and mind, in my understanding. But yes, no earthquake, you know, of note has happened between the 6th and the 18th, at least literally. I was thinking, was it going to be a literal earthquake or a figurative earthquake? I did not know. But I was thinking there was going to be a literal earthquake. But then on the other hand, I kept saying, no, there isn't going to be one. I had this ambivalence. But then I found out about this and I realized, I think this is the earthquake. And I know that, this is going to be maybe criticized by some who hear this, and that I'm just stretching things too much and that I'm just associating things that are not to be associated. But I really don't care because you weren't listening to me before when I was saying things that were not, that didn't sound that much of a stretch, that they were, you know, things within reason, easy to see, and you didn't listen. So I really don't care what you think, if you think that I am kind of stretching things a little bit too much. But the earthquake, as America was dying, I was waiting, is there going to be an earthquake? And then suddenly there was an earthquake. And let me read a headline from a story related to that earthquake. Let me see if I can find it here. This was posted on the Daily Mail on the 13th of September. So that's 3 days from the date of this recording. And it says, dailymail.com headline, mysterious lights were spotted in the sky before Morocco's devastating earthquake hit last week, and scientists don't know what caused them. So it says footage of strange blue lights has arisen following Morocco's tragic earthquake. Experts say the glow may be a rare phenomenon called earthquake lights. I'd never heard of that, but I guess that's why it's a rare phenomenon. But I find it, by the way, funny. You know, when doctors, for example, look at a disease and they don't explain it, but to kind of sound like they know what they're talking about, they give it a name that's exactly describing the disease, as if that means somehow that they have a handle on it. Like if you have like a bent toe, then they call it bent toe syndrome. But they don't know what causes the bent toes, but the fact that they gave it a name just makes them feel like they have a handle on it. Like, you know, they have given it a scientific explanation. It's, oh, you have bent toe syndrome. So it's almost the same thing here. Like, it's a rare phenomenon. We don't know what triggers it, but it's these lights that happen when right before earthquakes. So the phenomenon shall be called earthquake lights. And that's how they know, we have diagnosed it as earthquake lights. So I just find it funny that they always give it a name that's just describing what happened. It's like it doesn't add anything to, you know, to the story. But the thing is that it says here, strange videos have arisen in the aftermath of Morocco's devastating earthquake, showing mysterious lights in the sky before the tremor hit. Blue lights were seen flashing above Agadir at the foot of the Atlas Mountains hours before the 6.8 magnitude tremor struck. So the earthquake was centered around the Atlas Mountains, and that is significant, and we'll get back to that in a short while. But it says here, while the clips have not been verified, the unexplained sightings have baffled onlookers, with some suggesting that a UFO or a lightning could be to blame. Another possible explanation might be maybe, quote, earthquake lights, a rare phenomenon believed to take place in times of seismic stress. But no one knows for sure if earthquake lights even exist or what causes them. So, and they have a video here, and when you click on the video to play it, you see this flash of light, you know, these flashes of light across the sky. It's these strange blue lights that were flashing in the sky. And this made me think of this. I think we shared about this on this in the previous recording. This kind of meteor or flash of light that was seen in several places in America, right around as America was dying. And there's video, this impressive video, this almost like this huge ball of fire just flying across the sky, and people took videos of it, and it kind of reminded me of the same thing. These lights are different because these are like flashing lights, blue lights in the sky. It's not this like this huge meteor, flash, a ball of fire moving through the sky, but it's still a sky phenomenon. And the thing is that what I wanted to share is that this is the earthquake that I feel is a confirmation of the death of America. And you may say, well, what does one thing have to do with another? I know it sounds strange, but and this is where I'm going to get criticized, but as I said before, I frankly don't care anymore. Not that I cared too much before. Maybe I did, but I care even less now. The thing is that Morocco, when you think about it, it sounds a little bit like America. It has the M, the R, the C, Morocco. And this earthquake, which was centered in the Atlas Mountains, is near a major city in Morocco called Marrakesh. And that's how the locals pronounce it. I think that's what I read somewhere. Marrakesh. And MRK, America, Marrakesh. You just add an A at the beginning, Marrakesh. It just sounds like America. Morocco, America. And when I think of Morocco, the first thing I think of, as many might as well, is the film Casablanca, you know, about the story, this famous story with Humphrey Bogart and the sweet actress Ingrid Bergman. And Casablanca, as some of you may know, means White House in Spanish. And I think there's a reason why that Moroccan city ended up with such a peculiar name. But it makes me think of the White House and look at what's going on in the White House in America right now. And so I see a connection there. I am not quite sure what else there is, but it says, and the thing is that this earthquake was very impressive. And I read, I think in that same article on the Daily Mail, that geologists say that 6.8 magnitude tremor was the biggest quake to hit the heart of the country in more than 120 years. So this was not just a minor earthquake. It was a big one. And the Atlas Mountains. Atlas, as you know, is, you know, the famous figure, the mythological figure of this guy who was carrying the world on his shoulders. And I feel like that represents several things. In one sense, America was like the Atlas of the world. It had the responsibility of the world on its shoulders, but because it dropped the ball, in this case, the globe that it had on its shoulders, then its calling died. And I think that's why this earthquake happened around the Atlas Mountains. And it's also a fact, it's also representative of the people who have borne the burden throughout the years, the truth seekers who have been bearing the burden up until now. And because they were tired of bearing the burden for a nation that did not want to fulfill its calling, then the earthquake struck. And the earthquake in America is represented in the death of the country. That I feel that there's a connection there. And the other thing is that if you go to the Wikipedia article on Marrakesh, the city that the major city that was the closest to the epicenter of the earthquake, you will find that it says, I'm going to read, it's from the Wikipedia article on Marrakesh. It says, from medieval times until around the beginning of the 20th century, the entire country of Morocco was known as the Kingdom of Marrakesh, as the kingdom's historic capital city was often Marrakesh. I think Marrakesh is no longer the capital of Morocco, and I should know what the capital is, but to be frank, I don't know. But the thing is that Marrakesh, the major city near that was most harshly impacted by the earthquake, was the heart of Morocco, and that to the point that the whole country was known as the Kingdom of Marrakesh. The name for Morocco is still Marrakesh, it says in the Wikipedia article, to this day in Persian and Urdu. So if you speak Persian or Urdu and you want to say Morocco, you say Marrakesh, the name of the city. And it's also the name of Morocco in many South Asian languages, apparently. So this is just to emphasize how relevant Marrakesh is. It's not just one city in Morocco. It is basically the heart, the spiritual heart of Morocco. And the etymology of the name of Morocco is kind of debatable. It says in the Wikipedia article, some say it means land of God in Berber, you know, like Berber, the Berber pirates and all that came out of Morocco. And there's a historian that says that that there's a manuscript in the 11th century that apparently is the first recording of this. It says that the name Marrakesh means, quote, country of the sons of Kush. And I tend to lean towards this historian's explanation because, you know, if they were saying that all the way back in the 11th century, then it's closer, you know, it's old enough to maybe be more reliable, a more reliable source of the name. So So according to that, it means country of the sons of Cush, and that's why the Kesh at the end is kind of a distortion of Cush. And Cush Cush literally means black in Hebrew, and he's considered to be, for example, in the Bible, considered to be the you could say the father of black people, of literal black people. And this is significant to me because, as we've shared before, every progression of a person or a country or whatever, or of a society, tends to go through these stages, these seven stages. And the first stage is what I call what we can call the white stage. It's the stage of an epiphany. It's like when you're aware of the idea of a revolution comes to your mind, something new that no one has seen before, but it becomes clear as day to you. That's, you have that moment of epiphany, this white light that flashes before you, and you realize, oh, I see something that I hadn't seen before. And that's when the revolution starts. It starts in your heart. Then you go to the red stage. The red stage is when you take this idea and present it to other people, and the people, and you start causing conflict because some people side with you, some people side against you, and the divide becomes very, very real because your idea is so offensive to some people that they will try to kill you because of your idea, kill you figuratively and sometimes literally. But some people will side with you. So you become this source of division. That's the red stage. And then the next stage is the black stage. After the red stage, those who were opposed to you, in a sense, kill you off. And you go into this wilderness stage, the black stage, and you are separated from the structures that still hold on to the old idea, and you take your new idea into the wilderness, and you go into this black stage of loneliness, and during that stage your ideas get perfected, you get more understanding, and you get growth in the wilderness during your black stage. Then comes the green stage. The green stage is the stage where you go back to the structures that you kind of left behind in a figurative way, sometimes literally, but usually it's in a figurative way. And you go back and you get killed in a certain way. It's like you are sacrificed in a horrible way. And your sacrifice then triggers an earthquake, and the earthquake then triggers transformation. Then there are three other stages, but that is beyond the scope of this recording. It'd be too long to say the rest. But the thing is that America started with a white stage. We were born, the revolution, all that. Then we went into a red stage, and then a black stage, and we were supposed to go into a green stage, but we collectively as a country stayed in the black stage, and we never got out of the black stage. And to go from black to green, you have to cross a certain Jordan, a certain river Jordan that you have to cross, it means becoming radicalized. There's a certain radicalism when you go from black to green, when you're willing to die literally or figuratively, or bear a burden of heavy death, and you're not going to compromise for any reason on anything. It's like it's all or nothing, because that's what it takes for the revolution to be completed, for the idea that was birthed in you at the beginning to be fully manifested. It can't just happen in an atmosphere of compromise. So you have to go through to this green horse stage, stage where you go into a situation where you're willing to die for your idea, because you know how radical, transformative, and powerful, and wonderful that idea is. But America never crossed the Jordan. It always stayed in the black stage, and so in a sense, America is the country of the sons of Cush, because Cush means black. This is the country of the sons of blackness. We stayed black, never went green, and that's why, to me, it's fitting, even though it's happening all the way on the other side of the world. This earthquake, it's almost as if this earthquake is talking to us. And you say, why, you know, I don't know exactly why the people of Morocco are suffering now because of what happened here. But I know there's a connection. Don't ask me right now, because I don't have the full understanding right now, but there's a connection. And I was saying to myself, why didn't the earthquake happen here? And I felt like a voice saying to me, it's not the time. It's as if there's something that it couldn't be done physically here right now for some reason. It's just not the time, because if it had happened here now, it would have been such a distraction. It would have just triggered a whole bunch of other things that were not supposed to happen. It would have been just this... how can I say this? The country would have started to feel sorry for itself, and that's not what it's supposed to be feeling right now. I don't know how to explain it. It just was not the time for it to be manifested, literally, and maybe it will happen some years from now. But there was a reason why it was not meant to be done literally here, but it had to be manifested somewhere, and all that tension, all that death, and the magnitude of the death of this country just went and got manifested somehow all the way across the world in a place with a name that, when you think about it, sounds a lot like America, Morocco, in a city, Marrakesh, again, with a name that sounds a lot like America. And I know it's not a coincidence. And also, by the way, a lot of people believe that Marrakesh or Morocco is related to or that maybe this is a coincidence that Mauros, Mauros or Mauros, which is the ancient Greek word for black. It's tied to the origin of the name Marrakesh, and again the connection to blackness. I'm going to read this here. Now I know this is going to sound ridiculous too, but as I said before, I don't care anymore. But I'm going to read from Wikipedia. It says Yaqub al-Mansur, who apparently reigned, I think that's what it means, from 1184 to 1199. So he reigned, he had some sort of position of power at the end of the 12th century. So this Yaqub al-Mansur, possibly on the orders of his father, Abu Yaqub Yusuf, was responsible for building the Kasbah, a citadel and palace district on the south side of the city. The Kasbah housed the center of government and the residence of the caliph, a title borne by the Almohad rulers to rival the Eastern Abbasid Caliphate. Now, this is going to sound ridiculous to you. Two things are going to sound ridiculous to you, but Almohad, when I see the word Almohad, it makes me think of there's a word in Spanish for pillow, and when you spell it out, it's... if I'm not mistaken, it's the Almohad with an A at the end. And I would not be surprised if that's the actual literal origin of the word in Spanish, because the Spanish, as you know, were conquered by the Moors and were controlled to their shame, for like 7 or 8 centuries, or I forget how long it was forever and ever, it seemed, that the Moors controlled Spain. So a lot of Spanish words were kind of inherited from the Arabic language. So interesting that pillow or is the word in Spanish is almost identical to almohad. It's just has an A at the end, and I think that's not a coincidence. And it just makes me think of how America just put a pillow and just went to sleep and said, "I'm done. I don't need to do any more. I'm done," because we have the perfect system of government. And we don't need to change anything. We don't need any sort of national repentance or awareness. There's no need for any transformation. We don't need to change the matriarchal system. The worthless Christians in America just kept going on with the matriarchal religiosity and all that. We don't need to change anything. We're done. We just need to go to sleep. And so that's what draws my attention about that. And by the way, one thing I did remember the other day was that there was one of these recordings, I think it's called something like the Moorish Invasion of America or something to that effect. And, you know, the Moors were, a lot of them came from Morocco, if I'm not mistaken. So it'd be fitting that, in a sense, the Morocco, which was the invader, there's a posting on, there's a recording from the 24th of December, 2022, that is called The Tolerated Moorish Invasion, and some of you may have heard it. And it was right before a recording called The Jordan Non-Crossers. What a coincidence, that's what we were talking about a moment ago. The Tolerated Moorish Invasion. And so America has become a Morocco because it's been invaded, you know, in a figurative sense by all this Moors. And I think that that's another connection between America and Morocco. And now the thing with this thing about the Kasbah, it drew my attention when I was looking at the Wikipedia article because, to be frank, I had no idea what the Kasbah was, and the only reason why I knew the word is because of the song by The Clash, the English group, The Clash, called Rock the Kasbah, as some of you may know. And I didn't know the Kasbah was an actual place, and apparently it is. It's a citadel, a fortress, and palace district on the south side of the city of Marrakesh, in Morocco. And I'm going to read part of the lyrics of Rock the Kasbah, if I can find them here. It says, one of the verses says, "Now over at the temple, oh, they really packed them in. The in crowd say it's cold to dig this chanting thing. But as the wind changed direction and the temple band took five, the crowd caught a whiff of that crazy Kasbah jive." And then it says, "Sharif don't like it, rocking the Kasbah, rock the Kasbah. Sharif don't like it, rocking the Kasbah, rock the Kasbah." And then it says, "The king called up his jet fighters. He said, 'You better earn your pay. Drop your bombs between the minarets down the Kasbah way.' As soon as the sheriff was chauffeured out of there, the jet pilots tuned to the cockpit radio blare. As soon as the sheriff was out of their hair, the jet pilots wailed, 'Sharif don't like it, rocking the Kasbah, rock the Kasbah.'" And the reason why I'm reading these lyrics is that, and if I go back to verse 2, it says, "By order of the prophet, we ban that boogie sound. Degenerate the faithful with that crazy Kasbah sound. But the Bedouin, they brought out the electric kettle drum. The local guitar picking got his guitar picking thumb. As soon as the sheriff cleared the square, they began to wail." And that makes me think, you know, there was a crazy Kasbah sound from the truth seekers emanating across the country, this crazy Kasbah sound. But the matriarchal system in America in the worthless Christian, American Christian Church, and the conservative movement, they said, we banned that boogie sound. We banned that crazy sound from the truth seekers, that crazy Caspa sound. And they wanted to destroy it. And that's what it makes me think when I see the word Caspa, and I think of its connection to Morocco, that we had this crazy Caspa sound, and America tried to destroy that Caspa sound, and by trying to destroy that Caspa sound, it ended up destroying itself, because that crazy Caspa sound was what was going to save this country from its destruction. Ironically, it's almost like trying to kill your savior. You know, someone that's trying to save you, rescue you, you're about to drown and reaching out and making all the sacrifice to get to you, to get you out of that water and have you be free. And then, you know, them taking a gun and shooting at you as you're trying to rescue them. And that's what America did, and that's why America is now dead. And I still don't have a full understanding, and I know I didn't even know the plot to the Casablanca film. I just know about it, you know, because everybody talks about the film, but I never knew the plot until I read it recently, trying to figure out how it all ties in, and I still don't have a full understanding. But I know there's a connection between Morocco, Casablanca, and America. It's all related, and the fact that Casablanca means White House, and look at the son of a bitch who's living there now, and the White House represents, you know, the American government system. What greater symbol of the American political system than the White House? And to have a country all the way halfway around the world in an Arab country with a name that refers, you know, maybe unintentionally, but even so, it still doesn't. It immediately makes you think of America and the White House, Casablanca, and a name in Spanish, which also kind of points to the invasion that we've had from all the Hispanics, the Moorish invasion through the Hispanics. I know it all seems very connected. But why Morocco? Other than that, I there must be more. I still don't quite get it. But I know that earthquake, crazy as it sounds, is the earthquake that I was waiting as a confirmation of the death of this country. The Morocco earthquake, the America earthquake. I know we've been. We're long on time here, but on the time that we've been speaking, but I think we'll still have time to share a few things. I just wanted to share what I understand to be the death of each colony by date. So on the 6th, as we shared at the beginning and in the previous recording, on the 6th of September, 2023, Pennsylvania died. And by the way, I didn't want to share one thing. I've only been in Philadelphia one time in my life. I think I've been through it either by train or in a car several times in my life. But to be physically walking in Philadelphia, you know, and walking around and looking at the place, and setting foot physically in Philadelphia, it's only happened once in my life, and it was in 2016. I don't know why, out of nowhere. I'm not a person who travels too much. I'm not that type of adventurous personality. But I don't know why I knew that I had to go to Philadelphia. I just knew it, and I took a bus from New York and went down to Philadelphia and walked around the city for a whole day. And That day was Saturday, September the 5th of 2016. And I ended up at Independence Hall. I couldn't see Independence Hall because it was closed, and there was this angry black like security guard or police officer shouting at all the tourists, very rude. And I saw certain qualities, which are qualities of a very distorted judge. And now I understand why, because Pennsylvania and Philadelphia represented the judge personality of America. And I saw that in this black police officer or security person, a very distorted judge. You know, when a judge personality goes bad, it turns very legalistic, very harsh, very, very heartless. And I kept saying to myself, well, doesn't this guy understand these tourists are coming from some other place to visit Philadelphia, visit Independence Hall? Do you want to give them an impression like that? You know, that kind of inhospitality that you, I mean, instead of saying, hey, you know, thank you for coming to our city, our wonderful city, we're sorry, but, you know, you can't enter or you can't be here or whatever. He was just treating people like rubbish. And Philadelphia has been known to be a very harsh city. You know, they always say that they even boo Santa Claus. I mean, I would boo Santa Claus myself because I'm not a fan of that whole thing. But you know, the thing is that the Philadelphia fans in professional sports are known to be very, very rude, very harsh, and so forth. And now I'm beginning to understand the origins of that. That's because Pennsylvania represented the judge personality. But I was there on September the 5th, 2016, and I kept always knew in my heart there's something about that date. There's something about that date. And it's interesting that that was 7 years before. So it was September the 5th. So it was like, then 7 years passed, and then the next day Pennsylvania died. On the beginning of the eighth year after I had visited Philadelphia, Pennsylvania died, and I knew it was not a coincidence. It's as if I was sent to that place on that specific date, 7 years and one day before Pennsylvania died. So September the 6th, the date of Pennsylvania's death. September the 7th was the date of Massachusetts' death, the visionary personality, the Boston Massacre, you know, people, you know, making the sacrifice for the revolution. And September the 8th was the date that New York died. New York State and New York City died. Then September the 9th, and I was sharing before that I was wondering which state it was, which colony was dying on September the 9th. And when we say each colony, we represent, we not only mean the state itself, but what the state represented in the context of what America was going to become. And I wasn't sure if it was going to be Maryland or Virginia. And then I realized, no, on the 9th, Maryland died. On the 10th, Virginia, the colony of Virginia died. Maryland represented the server personality of America, but in a good sense, you know, the good qualities of the server personality that were going to be manifest. Because yes, we are living in a matriarchy controlled by the server and organizer personalities distorted. But that does not mean that we should not have a server personality, which is, we have to have it to be a complete person. It's just that it should not be distorted and should not be domineering. And Maryland represents the server personality for several reasons. First, Maryland, the land of Mary. Mary represents, you know, it's a female person, female name. Unlike the other states, you know, this is probably the only colony that had, well, aside from the Carolinas, I guess, a literal female name embedded in it, the land of Mary. And Mary, you know, represents, you know, in the Christian and the Catholic, for example, the Catholic sect, they have Mary kind of propped up and worshipped and revered. She represents the matriarchal system. And the matriarchal system is a system controlled by the server personality and the organizers. So it all seems to point to Maryland. And Maryland, you know, people in Maryland are willing to serve you. So there's a server quality to Maryland, and I was helped a lot by people in Maryland when we lived in Maryland with my family. So I know that the server personality is there, and not just in a bad sense, also in a very good sense. And that's why Maryland died. Then on the 10th, Virginia died, and Virginia represents the organizer personality. The organizer is the one who you know, organizes and structures things, but the organizer personality can at times be very pragmatic because they are goal oriented. The organizer personality sets a goal and organizes itself to achieve it in the most efficient manner possible. And because of that, they tend to be, if they don't watch out, they tend to be overly pragmatic. It's like, okay, we want to achieve the goal, so we need to compromise here and there because we don't want to, you know, get into this long drawn out fight on principles and stuff. And the judge is the opposite. The judge is like very, like, I'm going to fight for this principle no matter what, because it's the right thing to do. The organizer tends to be a little more practical. And when he loses the connection with the judge personality, shall we say, they tend to be very practical. And they're also, they don't like to die for a cause, because to them it seems so wasteful. You know, I'm more useful alive than dead. They are very utilitarian, so they don't die for causes. So they're not willing to die on a hill if they don't feel like that's going to be like very practical. And just to share a little bit on why Virginia kind of epitomizes that, let me just quickly pull up Madison's page on Wikipedia. And why Madison? Because as some of you may know, a lot of the important people at the beginning of the country were from Virginia. Thomas Jefferson was from Virginia. He was the third president. And then James Madison, the fourth president and one of the founding fathers, the main writer of the U.S. Constitution, basically. To me, he is the father of the country, the father of the Constitution. I mean, a lot of people call him that, actually. But when I think of the Constitution and who wrote it and who set up the founding principles, I think of James Madison. I don't think of anybody else, really. He was, if I'm not mistaken, the fourth. Yeah, he was the fourth president right after the two terms of Jefferson. And he was from Virginia. But let me see if I can find on this page here, his views on slavery. So Madison had slaves, but he also he knew that slavery was contradictory to the principles of the Declaration of Independence. He knew it, and I think he actually said it. So he had this kind of like conflicting kind of like, seems like he did one thing and said another and vice versa. But so let me just read from the Wikipedia article here in the section Views on Slavery. Madison called slavery, quote, the most oppressive dominion that ever existed. And he had a, quote, lifelong abhorrence for it. Interesting. He abhorred slavery, yet he owned slaves. But it's not as cut and dry as that. So there's more to it. In 1785, Madison spoke in the Virginia Assembly, favoring a bill that Thomas Jefferson had proposed for the gradual abolition of slavery. And he also helped defeat a bill designed to outlaw the manumission of individual slaves. Manumission is, I had to look it up, it's, I think it means the act of freeing a slave. When an owner says to a slave, you're free to go, you're free. That's manumission. I don't know why they have to make up such a complicated word, but that's what the word means. The thing is that in 1785, so we're talking about 4 years before Washington took over as the first president in La Casablanca. And so he was in the state legislature in the Virginia Assembly, or and along with Thomas Jefferson. And Thomas Jefferson had wrote a bill proposing the gradual abolition of slavery. Thomas Jefferson, a slave owner. So these were people with very contradictory points of view. And that's what a pragmatist ends up being, like a very contradictory person. Because they can hold these views, but when push comes to shove, if they have to compromise and be more practical, they are willing to do so. And that's why they become sometimes very contradictory people. But the thing is that Thomas Jefferson did want to, and it's a sad thing that this never kind of panned out. And as we've said before, this was the plan, or the idea was for the gradual abolition of slavery, starting with the founding of the colony of Georgia all the way to 1776. So 1785 is already too late, but at least there, you know, better late than never. But even so, it didn't pan out. Obviously, the bill didn't pass, or there would have been no slavery in Virginia after 1785. But Thomas Jefferson, who proposed it, but the thing is, if you're proposing, why don't you live it out first? Why don't you set your own slaves free first as a sign to the people? Hey, you know, I'm this important person, and I'm letting you know what I think about slavery, and if I can do it, you can do it too. But he didn't do that because, see, the organizer is always kind of very, very careful about making sacrifices because they are afraid of death. An organizer, when his personality gets distorted, he becomes very fearful of death. He always plays it safe. He's always very organized, very meticulous, very detailed. Everything is neat, nice, and efficient. And he's always afraid of chaos and death. To him, death is the ultimate chaos. You know, when you lose control of things and you can't, then everything just you can't manage anything anymore. You're done. They don't like that. They're afraid of death, and because they're afraid of death, then they usually don't make sacrifices. And to Jefferson, it would have been a great sacrifice. To Madison, it would have been a great sacrifice to set their slaves free as a testimony. But you know, they never did that. So I'm going to continue reading here. As a slaveholder, Madison was aware that owning slaves was not consistent with revolutionary values. But as a pragmatist, this sort of self-contradiction was a common feature in his political career. So he was a pragmatist. And it says here, there's no evidence Madison thought black people were inferior. Madison believed blacks and whites were unlikely to coexist peacefully due to the prejudices of the whites, as well as feelings on both sides inspired by their former relation as oppressors and oppressed. As such, he became interested in the idea of freedmen establishing colonies in Africa and later served as the president of the American Colonization Society, which relocated former slaves to Liberia. So, you know, and we've talked about this before. Lincoln was one of those sons of bitches who believed in this idea, just send the black people back to Africa and let's forget about the whole thing. When they never understood black people were brought here for a reason. And slavery was a necessary thing to punish the black culture for the sins they were committing against each other and against themselves, against their calling. They were not fulfilling their calling, so they were dragged here as a payment, as a prison term. But the prison term was going to last for a short while. And then it had to end. When Georgia, the colony of Georgia, was established, it was decreed that the prison sentence is done. It's time to let them go. But America did not let them go. and let them go so that they could be free here, so that they could establish here, roots here, and contribute to the country. This country was founded on two races, the white Anglo-Saxon and black people. They are the two foundational races of this country. And this country would have never been the same if black people had not come. They had to come and be part of the foundation. But Madison didn't quite grasp that. But Madison is known to have treated his slaves very well. Let me just read very quickly. As was consistent with the established social norms of Virginia society, Madison was known from his farm papers for advocating the humane treatment of his slaves at Montpelier. He instructed an overseer to, quote, treat the Negroes with all the humanity and kindness consistent with their necessary subordination and work, unquote. Madison also ensured that his slaves had milk cows and meals for their daily food. By the 1790s, Madison's slave, Sawney, was an overseer of part of the plantation. Madison ordered Sawney by letter to ready fields for growing apples, corn, tobacco, and Irish potatoes. Like Sawney, some slaves at Montpelier could read. Enslaved people at Montpelier worked 6 days a week from dawn to dusk with a midday break and got Sundays off. Paul Jennings was a slave of the Madisons for 48 years. Jennings, born into slavery in 1799 at the Montpelier plantation, served as Madison's footman at the White House. In his memoir, A Colored Man's Reminiscences of James Madison, published in 1865, Jennings said that he, quote, never knew Madison to strike a slave, although he had over 100. Neither would he allow an overseer to do it, unquote. As a house slave, Jennings had a basic education and was literate, taught in mathematics, and played the violin. Although Jennings condemned slavery, he said that James was, quote, one of the best men that ever lived, unquote, and that Dolly was a, quote, remarkably fine woman. Dolly, I think, was his wife. So Madison was very humane, he wasn't harsh, he wasn't disrespectful of black people. He even had one of the slaves, Sawney, become an overseer of part of his plantation. So he promoted this man. So he thought well of them. But he never made the full sacrifice. And again, Thomas Jefferson tried to pass a bill for the gradual abolition of slavery. And it was like, okay, I'm willing to let the slaves go if all of us do. You know, that's the attitude. If all of us are willing to set them free and pay a price, then I'm willing to pay the price with you. But if I'm the only one paying the price, that's not fair. So that's why he never let the slaves free. Because an organizer is not a visionary. And that personality, when it gets distorted, becomes the opposite of visionary. A visionary is willing to die for a cause. An organizer, distorted organizer, will do everything to avoid death and pay the ultimate price. Because a prophet, a prophetic attitude that sees a vision and says, I believe in the vision and I know that no matter what, my life is like a seed into the ground and it will produce something. But you have to believe in the long term. And organizers are very short-term people. They only think in the present. And that's why they never make long-term sacrifices. And all of this is to point out Virginia was the hotbed of the organizer personality. That's why so many of the presidents and people in relevant positions of authority in the early America were from Virginia. They were organizers, organizing the new country. And that's the personality that died on the 10th of September when the colony of Virginia and its calling died as well. And 10 is a number of sacrifice. Interesting. So on the day of sacrifice, the colony that refused to make sacrifices was killed. I just find that so fitting. There's a certain kind of sweet irony to it. Then on the 11th of September 2023, the colony that died was the colony of New Jersey. Why New Jersey? There are five personalities, as we've said, but aside from those five personalities that you're born with, there are two that I call like wild card personalities that you can adopt by will. Like you can choose to adopt those personalities if you're open to them. You're not born with them, but you can adopt them if you wish. And those two personalities are the personality of the dreamer and the personality of the prosperer. That's what I call it, the prosperer. So the dreamer is that personality that's willing to dream of big things even in the midst of smallness. That is what a dreamer does. And the dreamers rise out of poverty, rise out of limitations, and dream of achieving great things. And when that personality is allowed to play itself out, it does lead, you know, to rags to riches. And New Jersey has a lot of that dreamer personality. And just a way of confirming that is, for example, I'm recording this in Hoboken, New Jersey. Hoboken is the birthplace of Frank Sinatra. And Frank Sinatra sang that famous song, you know, New York, New York, that is a song about dreamers. You know, if I can make it there, I can make it anywhere. It's up to you, New York, New York. So it's someone who is dreaming from a state of smallness. And Hoboken used to be kind of a poor little town. It was populated by mostly Italians and some Germans, but it was not, you know, this upscale neighborhood. Now it's more gentrified, but in those days it was a little more kind of like a rough place. When Sinatra was singing this song, it just represents that, you know, being from a small place that doesn't seem to have much of a future, you dream of achieving these great things because you look across the river and you see New York and you dream of these great things. So that's what New Jersey represents. And the colony of New Jersey and that dreamer personality that America had and the potential of it being manifested was, you know, died on the 11th of September. And it's interesting to me. And another confirmation is that I got a very, very, I don't know how to explain it, a very peculiar correspondence by, you know, postal mail on the 11th of September, exactly on the 11th. And I can't go into too many details, but it really bothered me because it was from the state government. Not a state government, but it was a government thing that came to me, and it was something I had been dreading, and I'd been hoping that I would not get that, I hope I never get that, and that's what I got on that date in my inbox, in the mailbox on the 11th of September. And I'm still kind of hoping that it will all work out, but because there's a potential for that going very bad and to the point of me almost, I see in my head all sorts of bad scenarios that can stem from that, but I'm hoping it doesn't go that way. And it was from a New Jersey government, that sent it to me, and I felt, oh, interesting. New Jersey sending this to me on the 11th of September, and that seemed almost like another confirmation that New Jersey died on that date, and it was sending this thing to me as a almost like to kill me. Like I was the dreamer and I was being killed or trying to, it was trying to kill me. And America killed its dreamers. That's what America did, and that's why the dreamer personality and its potential died on the 11th of September, because America kept killing its dreamers. On the 12th of September, and interesting, as another side note, I arrived as a kid in New York. I set foot in New York at JFK Airport on the 11th of September of 1980. That's when I arrived in New York for the first time in my life, and physically arrived in New York for the first time in my life on the 11th of September of 1980. And 43 years later, whilst living in New Jersey, right across the Hudson River from New York, I get this disturbing piece of mail. And on top of that, New Jersey dies. And I arrived as a little kid dreaming of great things. If I told you my life story, you'd know why that was so relevant that I arrived on that date. And what it represented was the beginning of a brand new chapter in my life, all these things that were opening up, and the opportunity that was, the big opportunity that I was being given. I arrived like a dreamer. On the 11th of September of 1980, in Queens, Flushing, Queens. I think that's where the JFK airport is. And the thing is that 43 years later, the dreamer personality of America died because America killed its dreamers. And then on the 12th of September, the colony that died was the colony of Delaware. And Delaware represents the prosperity, the prosperous personality. And you may wonder why am I saying that? Just to give you like an idea, I found this article. Because I was very aware that there's some strong connection between credit cards and Delaware. Like all the credit cards seem to come from Delaware. So I did a search, and lo and behold, I found this article confirming that. This is an article on NerdWallet. Nerd as in, nerd. Nerdwallet.com. And the article is called "Why So Many Credit Cards Are From Delaware." This was published, this is by Claire Zosi, if that's how you pronounce it, published on the 17th of April, 2017 at 7:17 a.m. A lot of 17s there. It says here, thumb through the credit card offers filling your mailbox and you might notice a theme. Many have a Delaware return address. That's no coincidence. Delaware is home to the credit card businesses of Chase, Discover, and Barclaycard USA, U.S., according to the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. Bank of America and Citi also maintain certain card operations there. Together, those issuers represent about half of the U.S. credit card market. Meanwhile, Delaware residents account for only 0.3% of the U.S. population. What's behind the credit card industry's love affair with Delaware? It all started with a court decision almost 40 years ago. So they go through this story about this court decision. It's a lot to. A lot of things to say there, but not worth going into it. It just goes into the issue of federalism. It just made me really angry as I read it, because it just shows how federalism has turned everything upside down. But that's not the point of sharing this. The thing is that this court decision back in 78, the Marquette National Bank versus First Omaha Corporation, created this atmosphere. And then it says here, in the fall of 1980, DuPont was the governor at the time. The DuPont family is a very influential family in Delaware. They have the DuPont Corporation. I think they do like chemicals and plastics and things like that, if I'm not mistaken. But it's when you think of Delaware, you usually think of DuPont. And the DuPont family, very wealthy, very prosperous in Delaware. And they're so influential that they've had people from their family, you know, become governor and so forth. So there was this Governor DuPont in the fall of 1980, which is when I arrived in, almost when I arrived in New York. Yes, September 11th, 1980 was almost at the end of summer. So in the fall of 1980, DuPont's six-person bipartisan task force, on which Kenton played a role, whoever Kenton was, went to work on legislation that would become the Financial Center Development Act. So they did this Financial Center Development Act to draw banks to Delaware. And that's why Delaware has so many credit cards, and that's not the end of it. Let me see if I can find it very quickly. If you go to the Delaware article on Wikipedia, you will see if I can find it here. That let me see. This might not certify what we're saying, but it does point to the prosperity element. But it says here, according to a 2020 study by Kiplinger, Delaware had the 17th most millionaires per capita in the United States. Altogether, there were 25,937 such individuals. And I know it's not the number one, but for such a small state that you would think, you know, because when you think of Delaware, you don't think, well, why would I even want to go to Delaware? Every time I would go by there, through Delaware by train, through Wilmington, it was like the most depressing thing in the world. I would look out the window of the train and look at the city, and oh my goodness, this is such a depressing place. Who would want to live here? And I've heard comedians actually make jokes about Delaware, you know. So, but even so, this place that doesn't seem to have much to offer is 17th out of 50 states in the most millionaires per capita. The other thing is that it says here, more than half of all U.S. publicly traded companies and 63% of the Fortune 500 are incorporated in Delaware. That's a remarkable fact. 63% of the Fortune 500 companies are incorporated in Delaware. It says here, the state's attractiveness as a corporate haven is largely because of its business-friendly corporation law. Franchise taxes on Delaware corporations supply about one-fifth of the state's revenue. So Delaware is just living off of all this revenue from all these corporations that go to Delaware to set up. It says here, although USA Delaware ranked as the world's most opaque jurisdiction on the Tax Justice Network's 2009 Financial Secrecy Index, the same group's 2011 index ranks the U.S. fifth and does not specify Delaware. In other words, it's saying that Delaware, relative to the rest of America, has a very opaque jurisdiction. In other words, it allows corporations to kind of hide their money. That's kind of what it's trying to say. And it says here, in Delaware, there are more than a million registered corporations. A million corporations registered in Delaware. It says here, meaning that there are more corporations than people. Because the population of Delaware, if I look, go up here, all the way up, the population, it's actually a little over a million now, 1,018,396. But apparently there are more corporations than people, or almost the same amount. All of this shows you how prosperous this prosperity thing that Delaware has, that it can draw wealth unto it. And prosperers create this environment where they can basically, it's like they tap into something and they can live comfortably from that. That's what prosperers tend to do. And when they go awry, when they go astray, what happens with prosperers is that they start to turn into these very scheming people who do these wheelings and dealings to achieve easy money and easy success. That's what's happening. That's why this son of a bitch Bite Me and his little son Bobby Hunter Bite Me, you know, are all over the place doing all these business deals and all these corrupt things, because the prosper, when he goes very wrong, turns into this very sneaky wheeling and dealing type person who tries to tap into wealth, like a quick way to tap into wealth and then just enjoy the benefits of that income without much effort. That's why, you know, like credit cards kind of started off on that principle. Credit cards get a certain percentage. I forget what it is. Maybe it's 7. I guess it varies from place to place, but let's say 7%. They get a certain percentage of your purchase. So when you pay for something, you're not just paying for the product. You're paying for the product plus a commission to the credit card when you pay with the credit card. So the credit card is living off of your transactions without doing anything, well, other than just, you know, lending you the money. So then what that causes is everybody starts jacking up prices by that 7% or whatever it is to cover that, to cover all the people who are going to pay by credit card. So even if you pay cash, you're paying the full amount, shall we say, to compensate for the people who pay by credit card. So the credit card companies kind of like tapped into the, it's like a way of tapping into an economic activity and just reaping the benefits of it. And that's what the prosper does, especially when he goes astray. It's like they tap into an opportunity and they do wheeling and dealing and they just live off of the transaction. They benefit from the transaction. And that's Delaware. So Delaware died, the prosper personality, especially because of how corrupted it is and especially manifested in that son of a bitch was shuffling his feet through La Casablanca as we speak. How because of the corruption of the prosper personality, it was killed on September the 12th. And I could be wrong, but I think that's when the day when the indictments and all this stuff about the impeachment proceedings began, the whole process began, I think, if I'm not mistaken, on the 12th. It's as if Bite Me was, in a sense, and also the indictment against the son, Bobby Hunter, and then the impeachment process that kind of got kickstarted, sort of. I think it all happened on the 12th, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong, but it's around that time that Delaware died. Then on the 13th, the next day, so from the 6th through the 12th, we have all the 7 personalities of the human spectrum kind of killed off. The 5 kind of the ones that you're born with, and the 2 that you take by choice. You choose to be a dreamer, and you also choose to embrace the prosper personality. It's something you willingly embrace. So the thing is that once those 7 were killed off, then now we have 6 more to go. And I'm still not too clear on this, but interestingly, the 6 colonies that remain, 3 are in the north in New England and 3 are in the south. And so the 3 in the north, and I'm not sure about the order, but I believe this is the order. The three that remain in New England are Rhode Island, New Hampshire, and Connecticut. Rhode Island died on the 13th, New Hampshire died on the 14th, and Connecticut died on the 15th. And I found it interesting as I was listening to the news about Lee, that they started talking a lot about, I think between the 13th and the 14th, they kept talking about Providence, Rhode Island. You never hear about Rhode Island. Rhode Island is the tiniest state. Oh, by the way, Delaware is the second smallest state in the country. And the only one that's smallest is Rhode Island. And Rhode Island is so tiny, like no one talks about it. It just goes almost unnoticed. But this day I was listening to, you know, Rhode Island, and talking about Rhode Island constantly because of Lee. And I know that's not a coincidence, and it's because Rhode Island, I believe, died on the 13th. And on the 14th, New Hampshire died. And I think Rhode Island represents, those three represent, again, the male personalities kind of sectionalized in New England, in the North. Rhode Island represents the judge personality. Judges tend to be small because they are judging. A judgment is like a fire. Fire burns, consumes, makes things small, reduces things. So there's this connection between the judge personality and smallness. That's why you're going to see that people who are short sometimes tend to be the most judgy type people. And I know there's a correlation. It's not, you know, literally in one-to-one all the time, but there is a certain tendency for smaller people to be more judgmental. Or more judging oriented than other taller people. So Rhode Island smallness points to that smallness and that judging personality. On the 14th, New Hampshire died, I believe, and New Hampshire represents the visionary personality. New Hampshire, I think they're the ones with the license plate that says live free or die. You know, that's the visionary statement. You know, I'm going to be free or I'm willing to die for freedom. Even though there's a certain element of selfishness in that statement, because it's always like, if you mess, it's almost like my freedom. That's what I hear when I see that motto. It's not dying for the freedom of others. It's, if I'm not going to be free, then just kill me. But it's not talking so much about dying for the sake of others, if you catch my drift. But still, there's an element of life is not worth living or holding on to or compromising if you're not going to be free. The organizer is the opposite. The organizer wants to live as long as possible and avoids death as much as possible. The visionary says, hey, if this is my life, I'd rather be dead. And then that corresponds with New Hampshire and the visionary personality. They died on the 14th. Whatever New Hampshire represented, the visionary qualities of the colony of New Hampshire, it all died on the 14th. Then on the 15th, Connecticut died. And Connecticut, to me, in this context, represents the conqueror personality. Connecticut is also very prosperous. It's a very rich state. A lot of wealthy people live in Connecticut. And you know, a lot of wealthy people from New York, they go out and live in Connecticut. Because it's a nice, you know, kind of safe, quote, safe neighborhoods and so forth. But I do believe that in this context, it represents the conquerors, you know, all the conquerors who live in Connecticut, the people who achieve great things and are very successful, go and live in Connecticut. That's how I understand it. So. That those three colonies died in those 3 days. Then on the 16th, I believe the colony that is dying today, day of this recording, would be Georgia. And Georgia represents the judge personality in the South. Then on the 17th, and I could be wrong on the order of these. I'm still not too sure. I could be wrong with this. And now that I think about it, I think I am wrong. I think the colony that's dying today is South Carolina, now that I think about it. South Carolina is much more judge-oriented. It's very conservative. It's very like, you do it this way, you do it this way. I apologize. On the 16th today, South Carolina is dying. On the 17th, tomorrow, Georgia, the colony of Georgia, is dying. And Georgia represents the visionary personality of the South. That's why Martin Luther King came out of Georgia. People who are willing to pay a certain amount of sacrifice to achieve a higher cause, and fighting long term. So that's what Georgia represents. Georgia was founded on the idea of setting people free. That you're free of your debt, you have a brand new start in life. That is very visionary. Georgia was born with a very visionary mentality. So Georgia is dying on the 17th, and then on the 18th, North Carolina, the colony of North Carolina, dies. And North Carolina, in this context, represents the conquerors of the South. And that's why it's not a coincidence that Billy Graham, the evangelist, came out of North Carolina, because an evangelist is the Christian perspective, is the conquerors of the Christian church. They are the ones who go out and evangelize people and conquer them into the church. Unfortunately, Billy Graham just conquered a whole bunch of people into this matriarchal system. He was a conqueror, but I guess not a conqueror who achieved good ends in that sense. So those are the states that are dying by date. So let me just repeat them very quickly because we have run out of time and we had more to say. But on the 6th, Pennsylvania died. On the 7th, Massachusetts. And the visionary quality of this country died. On the 8th, New York and its conqueror personality died. On the 9th, Maryland and its server personality, America's server personality, died. On the 10th, Virginia and its organizer pragmatic personality died. On the 11th, New Jersey and its dreamer personality died. On the 12th, Delaware and its prosper personality died. On the 13th, Rhode Island and its judge personality in the North died. On the 14th, New Hampshire and its visionary personality in the North specifically died. On the 15th, Connecticut and its conqueror personality in the North died. On the 16th, South Carolina and its judge personality in the South died. On the 17th, Georgia and its prosper I'm sorry, its visionary personality in the South will be dead. And on the 18th, North Carolina and its conqueror personality in the South will have passed away. I still don't have full understanding on why there are three in the North, three in the South. Again, kind of re-emphasizing the three male personalities. I think it's but that completes the 13 colonies and the death of America as a first world nation. Permanent death. Thank you very much for listening.